Introduce yourselves, please.
Hi, I'm Michelle Schroeder. I'm the president of Faith Family Freedom Alliance of Kansas.
I'm Rabbi Moti Reber, and I am the executive director of Kansas Interfaith Action.
A very special Statehouse blend today, but first, we're going to hear the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
And joining Michelle, Moti, and me this morning in the KCUR 89.3 production studio is my colleague CJ Janovy. Always a pleasure to have you back at this table.
Thanks, Sam. Love doing Statehouse Blend.
And I love hearing you say that. So the Kansas legislature's taking a little break, and we're breaking from our regular format to talk about how religion plays into the legislative process over there in Topeka. But before we do that, we start this Statehouse Blend like we start every Statehouse Blend. Michelle, tell me about your family and your pets. And then Moti, you're up after that.
Well, I have three boys, Isaac, Eli, and Noah. They're in fifth grade, third grade, and first grade. They've been fighting the flu this week, so prayers for them. They're on the mend, though. And we have two dogs, a Great Pyrenees and a Golden Retriever, and a cat.
What are their names? We're not going to leave their names at the Pets app.
Lily, Sadie, and it's all girls. It's the only girls I get are the pets. And so, yeah.
Wait a minute. Lily, Sadie, and what's the cat's name?
Oh, our little kitty cat is, she is just a treat. Her little her little orneriness this morning was really too much for me to handle. But yeah, Lily is our Great Pyrenees. Sadie, I can't even think of my cat's name. What's going on with that?
All right, we'll check in with
it's
that
It's a
later.
New kitty, and I can't remember her name. My son is going to kill me for that.
Right,
sorry.
We'll call her Frankie.
Yeah.
Moti, your family and your pets.
I am married to the lovely Susie, who is a Kansas City born and bred. That's why I'm here. We have three children.
And you're a better man because of it.
It is, definitely. Mm-hmm. We have three children. Ellie is 17, a senior in high school. Abby is 15, a sophomore. And Joey is 12, and he is in seventh grade and is becoming a bar mitzvah in May. We have a dog named Molly, who is a black lab mix. And we have three guinea pigs. One is Strax. Belongs to Joey and is named after a Doctor Who character. And I also have a forgotten name. Ellie has two guinea pigs. One is Emily and the other one is the other one.
All right, we'll call the other one Frankie as well.
Callie.
Callie
is the cat.
Right. And jump in if you remember the other guinea pig name there. All right, so I got this idea, as usually we have lawmakers on the show, get to know the legislative process, the legislators. But I was in Topeka, and I was briefly in between covering the Kansas Board of Regents at the Faith Freedom Rally in the Capitol. And I got to thinking, and I had seen Moti testify there, and I was thinking about just how does religion play into the legislative process? And it's the and I've covered a lot of politics, but it's the one area where I just don't really have a feel for that. And so I wanted to get folks around the table and talk about that. I want to start though with you, CJ. You were over at the Faith Rally, and I'm wondering what questions you have about this.
Yeah, I was there that day as well, and it was a huge crowd at the state capitol. Estimates were between 1,000 and 2,000 people there. There were some, you know, speakers who'd been flown in from other places around the country. And what really struck me were a couple of things. First of all, the sort of anti-government sentiment to all of the speeches and the crowd in general was intense that day. And it was a crowd of people who clearly, you know, their ultimate authority is not government. Their ultimate authority was God. How does that reconcile with the very notion of civic law, public law? How does it play out in public life when there's an authority higher than the government? When
Michelle,
we're talking about public laws,
how does that all? How do you reconcile that?
Well, I think it's religious freedom is something that our nation was founded upon, something that has been a part of our culture and our society from the beginning. You know, the laws that we have, a lot of those come directly from our faith background. And so I think it's an easy relationship to have. I think the anti-government sentiment at the Religious Freedom Rally came from, you know, the speakers that were present have all faced persecution at the hands of government. Baronelle Stutzman was one of the speakers. I don't know if you remember her. She's a florist who is being sued, is possibly going to lose her business, her home, her livelihood, because she refused to make floral arrangements for a same-sex wedding ceremony. And, you know, that in the wake of the Supreme Court case that happened last summer, there's a lot of questions. People of faith are concerned that our religious liberty is in jeopardy. Part of that Supreme Court decision, the judges, the justices who, in their dissent, most of them called out this problem with our religious liberty. And I think it was Justice Thomas who said it would have ruinous consequences for religious liberty in our nation unless we protect that core foundation of who we are as a people. That, you know, it's something that people feel very strongly about, because they do live out their faith in every aspect of their lives. And that's the core of who they are. And it's something they feel very strongly about.
I want to come back to that for a second, but Modi, I want you to react to that and ask from your place in the religious world. Do you see that sort of persecution that Michelle is speaking about?
Well, you know, my I was not at the Religious Freedom Rally, and most of the people that I would work with weren't at the Religious Freedom Rally either. We're the part of the religious community that's not included in that subset of religious folks. So I want to explain my organization a little bit if I can.
Sure.
We grew out of an organization called Interfaith Power and Kansas Interfaith Power and Light, which worked on climate change, and we tried to develop a interfaith response to public policy issues. So we focus on bringing together clergy and congregants from different denominations to speak to important social, economic, and environmental justice issues. So a lot of the people that I work with are Christian ministers who have not had the opportunity, have not seen an opportunity to have a say in public policy and in advocacy over the last few years, because the conversation about religion has become so strident and, I would say, extremist. So we're talking about issues like environment, economic justice, social justice, refugee resettlement, this sort of thing, which I think are core elements of all of our religious traditions, you know, kind of going back to the social gospel, and bringing back this sort of public voice for a faith for the faith community in terms of justice and fairness for our citizens. So one of the things that we work on, I mean, we work on three kind of broad issue areas, and I take this from Dr. King, which are poverty, racism, and militarism, violence, and environmental justice, too, is the one we've added to that. So when we talk about racism, of course, racism is an important issue in and of itself, but my philosophy is that nobody should be discriminated against on the basis of their identity, and that would include Christians, Jews, Muslims, gay people, anyone on the basis of their identity, and that includes laws that would affect them negatively, or public accommodations in the case of what she's talking about. You know, I do not think, my personal opinion is that, and I think, is that the idea that there's persecution against conservative Christians, you know, I don't see it. I mean, I think that what happens is that people have privileges, and when those privileges are lost, they say that they're being persecuted. But I don't think there's anybody who has a more comfortable place in this country than white conservative Christians. So I didn't really see it as an issue that needed to be that I needed to address.
Michelle, I want to get back to what Modi said just for a second and ask, does your organization or the faith community in general have a position on, say, welfare reform in Kansas, on environmental issues? Is that something that you guys talk about?
The environmental issues, probably not as much. Certainly, welfare reform is something that we look at, are involved in, support anything
support
to bring people out of poverty. Some of the changes that the legislature has made in the last few years are focused on employment, work programs to help bring people out of poverty. I think the most important piece of that, the piece that we see, the compassion that we feel is that you don't trap people in poverty through dependence. You give them the tools and the help to bring them out of poverty so they can be independent and live their life according to God's design. Yeah.
So let me get back to how does this all practically play in the legislature? You have a long political career, work for Congressman Jim Ryan, also Todd T. Hart. Jim Ryan, of course, from Lawrence, Todd T. Hart down in Wichita area. Mm-hmm. And so how does all this play, right? I mean, what is the net effect of your political activism? And then, Modi, I want to hear the same question will come from you. So, what is the net effect? Are you helping to shape the laws in the state of Kansas? Do you think you're that effective?
That's our intent. It is our intent to help shape the conversation, to help shape the policy that the state puts in place, to help those in the faith community, to help those in poverty, to help bring them out of poverty, to support our communities. It's certainly the intent of the organization to do that. It's certainly been my intent over my 17 years in the political world to help shape public policy in a way that I believe benefits Kansans.
Yeah, but do you think you're successful? Are you getting it done?
I think so. Absolutely. Yeah.
Modi, you are a frequent testifier. I don't know if you get miles for that or not. But I'm wondering the same question to you. I mean, do you feel you're having an effect, that what you're saying and what you're advocating is that you're being heard by the Kansas legislature?
Well, Sam, I if you see me testifying, chances are very, very good that I'm testifying against something, because the people who are running the Kansas legislature and the government of the state of Kansas right now are not people who broadly agree with my philosophy. So we are basically trying to keep bad things from happening, and not very successfully. Basically, we try to figure out either we become the faith portion of a coalition working on an issue, or if there's nobody talking about an issue, then we'll find our way to that too, as kind of a voice in the wilderness. But a good example of this was when I testified on the refugee resettlement bill in front of the House Fed and State Committee, and there were 2 hours of proponents and 20 minutes of opponents, and I got cut off after 3 minutes. I mean, right now in the state legislature, it's a dog and pony show. They basically have what they have people say what they want to say, and either they severely limit people who disagree with them or don't let them testify at all. And I've seen that on a number of occasions.
So why even do it?
Well, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, it is the state government. At some point, it becomes less effective to do it that way. But also, I think there's a couple of reasons to do it. One is to show people that it's done. I mean, I think it really means something in the case that I cited to the Muslim community in Kansas to see a rabbi standing up there saying that being against refugee resettlement on the basis of fear of Muslims is not valid public policy. I think that inspires people. It brings them out. It makes them feel empowered in a way. We're trying to build a grassroots organization, so we want people to see that we're doing important work. The other piece of it is that hopefully this legislature won't be there forever, and we can sort of bring things back from the extremes a little bit. And, you know, we're building for the future.
I want to talk a little bit about the election coming up, but first I want to go back to CJ, you've been listening to this. What's your question for Michelle or Modi on the religious aspect of the Kansas legislature?
Well, it's just interesting to listen to these two sides, you know, and it's interesting to contemplate the concept of, you know, the rhetoric around this feeling of religious persecution. And I've done some research on the case that you talked about, this florist in Washington, Berenelle Stutzman, who was one of the speakers. And the claim is that she stands to lose her life savings and her home and her business. And she currently, if I'm not mistaken, faces a fine of $1,000 and $1 in court fees. And the guys who originally filed the complaint asked for $7 and change, which is what it cost them to take a cab to another florist. And it's this moment in politics in the United States where we're having this debate between public accommodations. If you take out a business license and open a business to serve the public, that means, I think, that a lot of people end up, you know, serving people that they may not disagree with in some ways. But now there's this line between, you know, who can you serve and who can you not serve based on your religious beliefs. And I think that that's going to be a really interesting political discussion in the years ahead as this country grapples with the idea of, you know, separation of church and state.
Michelle?
I would disagree a little bit with the way that CJ framed that. I think it's important to clarify in Mrs. Stutzman's case, she had served these individuals for a decade. They came into her store. She was friends with them, had no problem doing that. It was the act of participating and celebrating in a same-sex marriage ceremony. That is where the difference comes. It's not serving someone who comes into your establishment. It goes beyond that. It goes into being asked to be a participant in something that goes against your deeply held religious belief. For her, she talks about, she also testified in front of the House Fed and State Committee while she was in town. And she talked about, for her to create a floral arrangement, it's a creative process. She puts her entire being into it. It's just not, you know, here's your floral arrangement, you know, and then go on. She goes to the church. She goes to the location. She is truly throws herself into the entire occasion. So it's asking someone of faith to participate and celebrate in something that they just don't agree with, that their conscience and their deeply held religious beliefs just do not agree with.
So she should put a sign on her window basically that says, will not provide services for same-sex weddings. And you know, when same-sex weddings are legal and allowed by the state, what she's saying is she won't serve a segment of the population.
So how do you communicate that? That's an interesting question and one that I hadn't thought about before, right? How does a business owner communicate that?
Well, what the courts are telling her she must do at this point is not do any weddings. That part of her business has been closed down because, you know, it's still being litigated. We'll see what happens with it. But at this point, she isn't able to do any weddings. And so I think it just really goes to the core belief of, are we going to force people of faith to take part in events is what it is. It's not serving someone who comes into your place of business. It's forcing someone of a deeply held religious belief to take part in an event that they find contrary to their beliefs.
I'm not sure I would call that persecution in this case. I would say if that's her choice, then she's being offered of a choice to participate or to not participate. And, you know, in a public accommodation. And so I just feel like I don't see this idea of persecution being as much of an issue as the speakers and the folks at that rally suggested that it was.
Well, it is, because she's being drugged through the court system. She's being, you know, I don't know how many years this litigation is going to go out, but it's certainly affected her and her business. You look at the other speakers. Pastor Hernan Castano from Houston, he's one of the Houston Five, came and spoke at the rally. An incredible man. The Houston Five, I don't know if you know that history, but Houston was passing an ordinance, sexual orientation and gender identity ordinance. The mayor there and the city council had subpoenaed the sermons of these pastors to make sure they were in compliance with an ordinance, which for this to happen in the United States of America, we're going to subpoena sermons of pastors to make sure they're in compliance with a sexual orientation and gender identity ordinance is it's ludicrous.
I don't think that's technically actually what happened. There was an ordinance passed that would have prohibited discrimination against LGBT people and many others. The religious organizations challenged that, mounted a petition drive to repeal the ordinance, and there was a question about the legality of the signatures that were turned in. And so the city did subpoena several churches asking for a wide variety of information, and the city of Houston said that its effort was to determine whether the church petition gatherers were given proper instructions, and the sermon language was included in the petitions, which the mayor then withdrew that aspect of it
after the public outcry nationwide against an obvious overreach of government. Absolutely,
but it wasn't as if it was portrayed at that rally. It wasn't as if the city, you know, came to these churches and said, "Turn over your sermons." It was much, much, much.
If you go to our website, you can hear Pastor Castano's testimony. You can hear what he said at the rally, and he showed up at his church one morning to do a Bible study, and there was a representative from the city there with the papers to subpoena his sermons, his phone calls, you know, all of these personal conversations between him and his congregation. It was outrageous.
He gave very, very dramatic speech at the rally.
Well, I mean, I think isn't that the nature of politics now, where everybody is overly dramatic? And I want to come back to that. But Modi, I saw you lean forward. You have a thought about this?
I just think that what I said before, you know, there's a piece in Genesis where it says that everyone is created in the image of God. And that's sort of where we take our approach to this. I believe the persecution is happening in the other direction. If you go to a gay person and say that you're not eligible for legal protections because of gay people, I think what I was directly because you're gay, because I believe in something, therefore you shouldn't have legal protections. I don't think that's a valid public policy position. I think what I was going to say before is that, you know, 50 years ago it was the deeply held religious belief of many people in the South that Black and white people shouldn't get married. And what happened there was it was addressed by public accommodation, which is if you serve the public, you have to serve the public no matter what your personal opinion is, where no matter what reason you have for your personal opinion. So I think that in our society, due to the separation of church and state, it's often happened that society has dragged some religious people into the modern era. And I think that's happening with us now. I'm proud to be part of a religious denomination. I'm a Reconstructionist Jew, very similar to Reform Judaism. I'm proud to be part of a group of clergy that is open to LGBT people, that sees them as authentic people who have their own dreams and ambitions and deserve the same public protections as everybody else. I understand that there are people who have difficulties with that, but somebody's personal religious beliefs should not have public policy implications. And the United States, we have a history of excluding certain populations from the protections of the constitutional protections and equal treatment and equal protection. And over the course of time, we have gradually expanded those. Black people were excluded from them. Immigrants were excluded from them. At some point, a long time, women couldn't vote. They were excluded from them. And I think for a long time, LGBT people were excluded from them. And over the course of time, society changes and brings people along. And that's what's happening here as well. I'm completely supportive of it.
Yeah. I want to move on to and make this the last topic and talk a little bit about the 2016 elections. I think, Modi, I want to go back to something you said, that in your view, nothing is going to change in Topeka unless there are different people in the legislature. I'm going to assume that, Michelle, you're pretty happy with the Kansas legislature right now. And so my question to both of you is, what political activities, you know, are you going to be involved in the 2016 elections? And if so, how? Michelle, I'll start with you.
As far as this legislative session and moving into the 2016 election, we are trying to get religious freedom protections passed through the legislature. We would very much like to see that happen this session. As far as the upcoming elections, we will be active in supporting candidates and making sure the voters and those grassroots individuals who believe religious freedom and pro-family issues are important to them, we'll make sure they know what legislators are supportive of those same positions. As far as, you know, the state legislature is a conservative body. As far as my view goes, that's served Kansas very well over the last several years. So I certainly am happy with the way that the legislature is made up right now, and we'll support those candidates that have proven that they're pro-family and support religious freedom.
When you say support candidates, you'll be involved in primary races as well? If there is a moderate Republican running against a conservative Republican, you'll be involved in the primary?
Certainly.
Postcards, radio ads, what are you going to be doing?
Whatever's necessary. We want to make sure that the voters are educated and understand the issues and know where those candidates stand on the issues.
Modi?
Well, I'm a 501c3, Sam, so I can't take a direct. I think that from my point of view, and maybe this is personal, I mean, I'll try to square the circle a little bit. I think that the Kansas legislature, the Kansas government over the last several years has been a conservative dystopia. A petri dish of bad public policy. I mean, one only has to look at the budget situation, where they can't make their revenues, they have to cut school funding, they can't balance their budget, they have to borrow from KDOT and then put bonds out. It's just a nightmare. That's only one example. These public policies that come through the Fed and State Committee, for instance, the one that Michelle is advocating, is terrible public policy from my point of view. The way that the government is designed is for people from different opinions to have to compromise in order to govern. And when you have a conservative, right wing, ultra conservative supermajority, they don't have to compromise on anything. And so you've seen the disaster that Kansas state government has been for the last 6 years. So that's pretty political. I will not.
Well, you know what? We won't tell the IRS.
I would say that there are many organizations that I would say do direct electoral work. Women for Kansas is one of them. Mainstream Coalition is one of them. They're a moderate organization here in Johnson County. The Sierra Club has a list of endorsements. The KNEA has a list of endorsements. That's the teachers union. I would encourage any listeners who are resonating with what I'm saying to go find any of those organizations and look at their lists of races and follow them. I would trust any of them.
CJ, we're going to wrap it up here. We're going to – your final thought or question for Michelle and Modi.
Well, it's just interesting, again, I'm literally sitting right between these two folks. One's on either side of me, and you know, it's a pretty wide gap here in the middle. And what's interesting, Sam, you cover education. You're the education reporter here. You and I share an office, and I think that from what I can tell from your reporting and what else I'm seeing in Kansas, it's going to be really interesting to watch the electorate grapple with this majority legislature and how that's making policy that serves the entire state. And education is where folks seem to be especially riled up. And I don't know, I don't know how that's going to play out in the next elections. I'm interested to see how the people of Kansas vote on things that have nothing to do with religion but have to do with basic services in the state.
Education is certainly a huge issue. It's the biggest part of our budget. K-12 education takes up 52% of the budget. You throw in Regents universities, you're well over 60%. I would disagree that education has been cut. It certainly has not. It's increased over the last several years.
Depending on how you cut the numbers.
Depending on how you cut the numbers. Every way that I cut the numbers, education has increased over the last 6 years.
I could cut them
years.
Differently. I'm just saying.
The only cut that education has seen was under Governor Parkinson. It has not been under Governor Brownback.
That's not what the Supreme Court thinks.
That's not what any court thinks, frankly.
If there was a problem, I think you'd have to go back to the previous administration. But certainly education is an issue. It's a very hot topic issue. You bring up the Supreme Court. That's something the legislature gets to deal with. That portion of the Supreme Court case, not necessarily means they have to increase funding, but it certainly means they need to redistribute what they have or increase the funding in some way. A new finance formula I don't think is going to happen this year. I don't see how they can do that in the time they have left, but certainly something they're going to be looking at and I think will play a role in the coming election of who is it that you want at the table to write that new school finance formula that will be in place for years to come, certainly.
Yeah. Modi, final thought on that?
I want to go back a little bit to basic principles. Every time I get interviewed, especially when I was getting interviewed on climate change, people were saying, how could there be a religious person who's a liberal? And I'm like, don't you remember Dr. King? The idea that religion doesn't have what to say about social justice, economic justice, I think a lot of the reason why people are resonating with my organization is because it's giving them their religion back. I think religion has been kidnapped by people who have a particular political point of view. If you look at Governor Brownback, he has what I consider to be a very damaging and dangerous public policy position, which he couches in this deep religiosity. And I think it's very important for people to know that there is an authentic message of hope and justice and love and compassion within our religious traditions. It's a minority in the state of Kansas, but it's there and it has important things to say about our future as a people, as our future as a nation. And if anybody hears this and says and can say that this is the kind of message that would resonate with them, then I hope they will look up our organization because we're here to bring that message.
I'm going to wrap this up, but not before I hear both of you say that you can absolutely respect the other side's position, not necessarily agree with it, but understand that it has some legitimacy. So speak up. I want to hear that from you guys.
Absolutely. I enjoy always hearing the other side. We grow from that. We grow from conversations like this. I think it's important that we do hear each other. I do cringe a little bit when the other side thinks that they have the corner on the market on love and compassion. I don't think that that's true. I think we can agree that we all want the best for the state of Kansas, for the people of Kansas. And so I've enjoyed the conversation very much.
Moody?
I respect that people have honestly held religious beliefs, as they said before. I mean, I think that, you know, in the same vein, I mean, I think it's important that we the way the government is supposed to work is that we're supposed to have our positions and then compromise them when there's a supermajority, compromise doesn't happen.
It's a little harder.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a lot harder. I'll give you that. All right, we're going to leave it there. C.J. Janaby, always a pleasure to have you here. I am a better reporter because I sit next to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Sam.
Rabbi Modi Raber from Kansas Interfaith Action, thank you. Michelle Schroeder, Faith, Family, and Freedom Alliance, thank you. So we end the podcast generally by asking our guest for their favorite song, and that's what we walk out on. Now, because we have two guests today, you will both offer up your favorite song, and then I will decide. Modi, we'll start with you.
Box of Rain from the Grateful Dead off the American Beauty album.
I didn't expect a Dead a song offering, but I'm pleased by that. Michelle?
Oh, my goodness. I'm a huge Toby Mac fan, so I think you can pick any song off the off of a Toby Mac album.
I'm not picking
Speak
anything.
Life.
This is your job right now.
One of my
now.
Favorites is Speak Life, so that I enjoy that one a lot. So there you go.
I have to say that we have not had a Grateful Dead rollout song yet, so we're gonna go with that. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. Our friends down the hall there at Up to Date make a little room for us Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Want to be a citizen voice on a future Statehouse Blend? You can email me. I'm sam@kcur.org. You guys fans of the Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fans of the Twitter? You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. My co-host is Brian Ellison. He's at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff, and I'll see you around the radio.
Birds are waiting, rain is falling from a heavy sky.